Welcome to a new episode of the Rebel Radio Podcast, trucking forward on our 10th anniversary here in early May, officially 10 years. And yeah. In case you ever want to get caught up on all the amazing episodes we've had, go to the rebelradiopodcast.com and you can find the archives there and all our great episodes and links to everything. And we are going to officially start celebrating real soon. We're going to have some top fives that are Rebel Radio oriented, bring back some old school stuff we used to do. And then we're going to have a 10th anniversary show that's going to be kind of separate from our regular episodes that we're going to record and put out there for all you people to enjoy and listen to, especially those people that live in Budapest and small countries, because we love you like you love us.
Yeah. And we don't know what you're saying, you know, but right. We hope that you actually know what we're saying.
Well, you would hope so if they're listening. I mean, are there devices
they just
now
play that as background noise? Maybe, you know, maybe they just right, like listening
to these crazy fucking white people, man, you know? And yeah. It's like, I wonder if there's like a translator app that can translate our voices. I'd have to find out. Isn't man. I would love to be like, what do I sound like in Dutch or something? You know, that'd be pretty wild.
Yeah.
That would we'll have to research this, you know? What are we called? Are we the Rebel Radio Podcast, or do they censor us and say something like the Root Beer Radio Podcast? You know, I don't know.
I wonder. They're like, oh, we can't say Rebel.
Yeah. You know, I wonder, you know, inquiring minds. I'm ready to be off for a week. I'll tell you that, man. It's been a hectic kind of 3 months since the last vacation, and here we are recording before you and me both take a week off and have some time not strangling the children.
I'm hoping I can take them to Houston Toy Museum this time. That's a place that I've been meaning to take them because it's you know, very inexpensive.
Watch their social media. They usually will run specials on spring break.
Pay your age, right?
Sometimes, yeah, depends. Sometimes. I'm taking mine to the zoo on Wednesday next week.
Nice. So,
already bought tickets. So I'm taking them to the zoo. So that should be fun. I will say, look, kids, your relatives, the monkeys. wait a minute. That sounds really wrong. I don't mean it like that. I meant like because
they're a bunch of rowdy. Yeah.
Sometimes. Yeah. Yeah. And that's what I meant. Wow. Man, boom. If Wong was on the show, I'd never hear the end of it. You know, I still don't know what the Schindler's List joke is y'all claim I made. You know.
Well, so there was a time since we're talking about Rebel Radio history. Me and Long had a sidebar conversation after you shot down like a couple comedies that we tried to propose. And so we're like, hey, we should just like name a very inappropriate movie to laugh at. And we should just say that that's Mark's favorite comedy. And so we came up with Schindler's List and tried to say it was your favorite comedy. We made like a thing of it. And so we're like, yeah. And so that was on an episode. So we had a sidebar conversation on our phones, like texting. And he's like, man, what should the movie be? And so we're like texting while the show's going on. And we're like, yeah, you know, Mark's favorite comedy, you know, and it was either going to be Schindler's List or Sands of Iwo Jima. It was the two that we had come up with, and it ended up being Schindler's List.
Yep. Y'all are assholes.
We are. Yeah, we are assholes.
Get it for making me do that fucking comedy month we did a couple years back. Good Lord, that was poor. Never again. Ever. Not saying
Three Amigos was classic. Like, yes,
yeah. Mark does like some comedies, but we're never doing a month like that again.
Yeah, not a full month of it. Yeah. You have to find the ones that age well. And it's hard.
Men in Tights, crap. Crap.
Crap.
Anyway, man. Oh, geez. I tell you. But otherwise, now that I've completely lost my train of thought, what's happened this week? Anything exciting? I can't think of any big news I've heard this week.
Man,
they showed the episode titles for X-Men 97. It's gonna be like 10 episodes, and that's kind of cool. There's no new trailers or nothing.
There's talks of a Dune Messiah script already written.
Well, yeah. Well, no, there's no talks. Villanova's writing it right now.
Writing it.
No. Yeah. But he's not guaranteed that he's directing it. He's probably will, but he's not going to make it next. He's going to take a break and make something else in between.
Well, it's a 12-year time jump from the second book and the third book.
Well, that's what he said. He wants to, a couple years from now, give the actors a little chance to age a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, I mean, Timothy Chalamet looks like he's going to look like a child for years.
he looks like that actor. Yeah, looks like that. What can I think? LaRusso.
Brad Pitt. Brad Pitt looked like he was 21 years old for 30 years.
Yeah, but he at least looked like an adult. Timothy looks like he's still like 15. He looks like very like teen, but you're right. Pitt looked like he was 21, 22 for like 20 years, you know.
Damn them, and they're good genes.
Yeah, I know, man.
But you know, when you're a Hollywood actor, man, you can afford to do that. You don't have to work a 9-to-5 job. You don't have to anyone tell you what to do. You got nannies taking care of your kids, so you can go work out, eat right, eat healthy, and look sexy all the time. You know, it's a lot easier to do.
You have a home, a big ass home, and you have your nanny and your kids on the other side. Yeah. With a gym in it. And then you just call a trainer over that's going to, you know, force you to move your ass. And, you know, you try and pick up a donut and they slap it out of your hand. You know,
that's right.
Oh, eat this salad instead. No donut for you. God, fuck.
That's right. It's not fair.
No donuts.
It's like,
have this nice vegan donut. It's made of meat.
Ugh, it's probably a thing too.
No, that's a double negative. Vegan that's donut nasty. Made of meat.
I mean,
I
generally try to eat better lately, but I could not go meatless. It's just not happened.
No, dude, I couldn't do that.
Gotta have that beef now and then. Yeah.
Well, and remember, if you don't have meat, you literally have to take a supplement because you're not getting all the nutrients.
Which probably makes you poop a lot. Who wants to take that?
Yeah, exactly. And probably make your
all that like roughage, man. And those, shit.
Yeah.
Yeah, all that roughage, man. Vegans got to be shitting like crazy all the time.
For real. You know, some people say that it's wrong to eat animals. Animals have a defense mechanism. Well, I say plants have defense mechanisms too. Brussels sprouts, they taste like shit. They don't want to be eaten. Think about it.
That's a good
steak.
Point. On that note,
tastes great.
On that note, man, I know you texted and you were watching Shogun. Have you watched all three?
I watched the first episode. Just the first episode.
I watched all three that are out so far, man. And this is an extremely well written show. It's a political intrigue, some action, really good characters, really interesting characters, amazing set designs, amazing costumes.
Yeah, costumes are.
I think my only beef is your Hulu like foggy. Is the 4K presentation on your Hulu? I don't know.
I thought maybe it was just trying to set a tone with like the
I think it's a Hulu thing because even when I watch. Even when I watched The Creator was kind of darkish in places. I think it's about Hulu.
Yeah, Creator was dark whenever I watched it as well. I had to watch. Yeah. I just try and watch movies at night and then turn like my living room light off so that it's fairly clear.
Mm-hmm. You're only in the first episode, but man, what's cool about it is it feels a little slow, but at the same time, if you're really paying attention to what's going on, it's a slow crescendo. It's building and it's building. It feels like if you've seen the trailers, obviously, that this show is going to unleash and it's going to unleash some holy hell badassness coming. You know, that's what it feels like.
That's what it looks like because you don't know what's coming. I see the pirate, the the pirate that washed up on shore saying that more are coming. And I'm like, is more coming? I thought they were like freaking looking for Japanese land and they just kind of found it by chance. And I didn't think they had any more ships following them because they had mentioned that they went down in numbers. So is there more coming, you know? And I thought this was going to be a show maybe about the Boxer Rebellion, but it doesn't look to be that way. It looks more like a struggle for power.
No, it's based on a novel of the same name.
Okay.
And the novel was written in the 70s.
Yeah. Okay.
What do you think about so far, though?
It's well acted. That's one. The costumes look good. I think the dramatization is good. I like the tension that they're able to build up, especially in the meeting at the beginning that you see.
Well, that just keeps building, trust me.
Yeah. And what you call it? I must have been looking away because then all of a sudden I see this chick like just macking on one of the leader's sons. And she's like, do you want me to leave? Or do you, you know, and he's like, no, you can keep going. And I'm like, this is weird. It's just having her way with his son in the same room.
Concubine.
Yeah, yeah. A concubine. But I guess that's how things were. Yeah.
He apparently liked to watch his son in the concubine. Yeah.
Yep. He's like, no, wrong angle, son. Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe you just want to give him some pointers.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, you gotta make sure you instruct your child to, you know, be the best that they can be, I guess, you know,
that's it.
Sure. Weird. But,
man, but yeah,
dude, it's, and the sets are, I don't know how they're pulling it off. If they're filming on location, I haven't looked into that. It doesn't,
it's hard to tell because a lot of these shows now are using these digital sets and stuff that are almost realistic and it's hard to tell, but, I wonder where they've been shooting this. It feels too real, but yet exotic. So I feel like it is being shot on actual location.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm wondering because
it says on their IMDb page where it's shot.
Whenever you say that the sets like could be green screen, it reminds me of Ewan McGregor talking about how he had to film some of the scenes. Okay, so
it shows
it's
shot in Canada. It does show it's shot in Japan, but I'd be willing to bet the Japan locations are probably like not full set. They sent crews over there to shoot, you know, aerial shots, things like that. I bet, you know.
Yeah, landscape.
Right. Because it shows it's being mostly shot in Vancouver, which is a very popular place for shooting television and movies in British Columbia.
Yeah, that makes more sense.
Yeah. So that makes sense. But yeah, no, it's a good show so far. I really like it. It's real interesting. I want to see where it goes. I mean, I think since it's based on a novel, I think it's just a one season special miniseries thing, which is cool. I like shows that have a beginning and, you know, it doesn't need to run forever.
Have they announced how many episodes will be in this
series? I think it's 10. It shows them all listed on Hulu already and just when they come out. I think it's 10 episodes.
Oh, okay. I never scrolled down. I just went to the main picture and
it's
hit
interesting
play now.
Too. It's basically a Japanese show. I mean, there is English in it, but it's majority of it's in Japanese. And if you look at Hulu, it shows there's an English dub, which I thought was interesting that they took the time to dub it in English also for all the Japanese actors. But a lot of the Japanese actors are in it. I've seen in other things and I know that they can speak English, but I think it's really cool that they stay true to the actual language, you know?
Yeah.
And
sometimes things are more powerful in a foreign language versus, you know, dubbing.
Well,
you know?
And the relationship that Hawthorne starts to build, you'll see throughout the three episodes with Sonata's character of Toragana. The relationship they build, even without being able to speak each other's English, feels more important by them having that difference in each other, you know? So I think it works for that reason. And, but it's a good show so far, man. I really like it. I'm excited because there hasn't been a whole lot to watch. I feel like I haven't really watched a TV show since The Last of Us last year. So, you know, it's cool to have something new to watch on television. There's things I'm terrible about starting shows. Like I still haven't gone back and finished Blue Eyed Samurai, you know? I've been kind of trying to get back into Rick and Morty lately, but again, I'll do an episode and come back 3 weeks later. And by the time I finish the season, oh, there's a whole new season out. You know, I'm just bad when it comes to television. But Shogun, I'm going to stick with each week because I really like it. And because I'm really into something, I'll definitely keep up to it. Like the new episode of The Bad Batch, I already watched it. Another good solid episode. Didn't move the story a whole lot forward, but this story was about there's a character of Crosshair who had in a previous season had betrayed the Batch, and he's found his way back into the group, and so this show was about him redeeming himself with the group, and so it had some important story elements to it. You know, but it didn't move.
Did he betray the group in season one or season two?
Yeah, pretty early on, like in season one. Yeah.
Okay. Because whenever you mentioned that, I was like, yeah, that's what I thought.
Yeah.
Because I was like, man, I was like, I forgot if that was in season one or season two.
Yeah, I think it was towards the end of season one. Might have been the season finale. Yeah.
So. Yeah.
But just great masterful storytelling, as always, from David Filoni and his animation crew. The guy is him and we said it before. Him and Jon Favreau just continue to work new Star Wars magic over there, and it just goes to show the Mandalorian, the Ahsoka TV series, almost everything they touch has been a hit. The Boba Fett show might be the slightest miss they've had, and it even wasn't that much of a miss. I still enjoy most of it, but then you see like Obi-Wan and Andor. Andor was well received by critics. Star Wars fans didn't like it as much because it didn't feel Star Wars enough. And Obi-Wan was kind of a mixed bag between fans and critics. And guess who didn't really touch those? Dave Filoni and Jon Favreau. So it just comes to show you what those two guys are doing with Star Wars, that they're really hitting it hard. And The Bad Batch continues that. And hopefully we get our first look soon at The Acolyte and our first look at The Skeleton Crew, the new shows that are coming this year. And we'll see where Star Wars continues to go. Man, but that's really, I didn't watch a whole lot this week under those. I tried twice to sit down and watch Aquaman and the Lost Kingdom, but just haven't had a chance to yet.
I started it, and it's pretty damn ridiculous.
Well, the first one's ridiculous. I mean,
dude, it's even more ridiculous. It's even more ridiculous. Like our friend Justin Corbett was like, man,
saw their post, but Justin doesn't like anything.
So, I don't know. He likes Arnold. He's a big Arnold fan. Yeah.
But here's my problem with the thing, Aquaman. Okay. People already got in their minds that the DCU was ending. And so they automatically tend to get a negative response in their brain to it.
Yeah.
Instead of just sitting it back and enjoying it for what it is. The first Aquaman is utterly ridiculous, but also utterly enjoyable. And I think that you have to view the Lost Kingdom in that similar light. It's going to be the Aquaman's a ridiculous character. You know, if you really think about it, Jason Momoa makes him badass. And so I think you have to view in that light. You just sit back and enjoy it for what it is. You're not watching Aquaman to watch a serious film like The Batman, you know. So
that's a good point.
It's fair to say.
It is. Yeah. It is one of the lighter superheroes of the DCU. Yeah, there's a lot of comedy, and you see Amber Heard right at the beginning. So it's like if you're hoping it didn't have Amber Heard in it, and you're looking,
doesn't bother me. I don't care. Yeah. I don't get caught up in what her pooping on Johnny Depp's bed is. What it is. Yeah. You know?
Yeah.
Man. I mean, there's actors out there that have done much worse that are still in films, aka Kevin Spacey. You know. Yep. So Amber Heard being in the film doesn't bother me. I didn't care if they had cut her part or not. It didn't bother me. You know.
This is true.
It's the way I see it.
Yeah. Other than that, though, I did watch the Matthew Vaughn film that I was going to try and watch earlier this year. But it was Argyle, starring Henry Cavill and Howard, Bryce Dallas Howard, Sam Rockwell, Bryan Cranston.
Don't tell Kevin me you paid $25 for that.
No, I paid $20.
Still.
Me and the wife had a movie night. I know. I can't remember. It's going to stream.
It's already had a streaming date announced. They already said it's, I can't remember if it's Peacock or Paramount that owns it. And they already said it's going to be there like in 3 weeks or something.
Probably.
Or within 45 or within like 40 days or something.
But you know what? It is.
One day you're going to learn.
One day. Well, I did learn with Poor Things. So I'm definitely watching Poor Things. I might watch it after we record. Or tomorrow morning. Emma Stone is apparently like she, you know, there's not a lot.
The concept of the movie doesn't sound interesting to me.
I'm going to see if I can watch it. I guess she's like a Frankenstein sort of.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to see. I'm going to give it the old college try. But Argyle was actually fairly entertaining.
Matthew Vaughn's always made pretty entertaining films.
Yeah. I think the action scenes are fun. They're not like great spectacles that should be put in a glass case at the Smithsonian.
Vaughn uses too much wire work.
Yeah. And that's exactly what's used here.
Problem with his Kingsman films. It's all wire work. It's not even real action. Yeah.
And I like Sam Rockwell. It's been a while since I've seen him on screen. I want to say I saw him in something after Iron Man 2, but he's good at what he does. The kind of, you know, quirky.
Yeah. He kind of floats around different movies. Yeah.
Yeah. But I like him in this film. And having Cavill with the horrible haircut, Dua Lipa, and John Cena in some of the scenes definitely make it an interesting watch that will definitely keep you engaged in the film. I think it's definitely worth a watch. I don't think it was worth the $20. I wish I would have been able to rent it for like $5, but definitely something worth checking out.
So wait a few weeks, they probably could have rented it for $5, but no, they have
to. Yeah, but who wants to wait?
Did I say that?
Yeah.
Most people, they're suckering you motherfuckers in. That's what they're doing. The stuff goes Fandango at home, wherever they call it, within a few weeks. And then they're like, oh, we're going to get some suckers. And they make that extra money. And then we're going to put it on streaming 3 weeks later. And look at these suckers. We got them to pay money. And I'm sitting right across from one of those suckers right now.
I'm one of them, man. They got me. They get me more often than they don't.
During COVID, like 90% I kind of get it. You know, during COVID, I kind of get it. You know, I mean, I bought Scoob and I bought Bill and Ted, which that's probably the only one I really regretted buying. But that was a different time. Now it's like, be patient. It's like, I can wait a few more weeks. It'll be out.
Just a few more weeks.
That's right.
But that's about it, though. Yeah.
So, I mean, that's not as bad as buying anyone but you. I can't believe you bought that. Yeah.
I can't. I blame the wife on that one.
You want to see Sydney? Just watch Euphoria. You know, I mean, it's all.
This is true. She doesn't.
Only the first episode. And then after that, the show starts getting off the deep end. But you know, so anyway,
just the first episode.
All right, let's get into today's feature film, man.
Pop culture. This month in pop culture?
Well, yeah, I was going to do pop culture after the feature.
Oh, after the feature. I always thought we did it before.
We've done it before, but we also do it. We're doing it after.
Yeah, I was just making sure. You get older.
Last month you pulled a rope-a-dope on me. We did it before. We normally do it after the feature.
My fault. Yeah.
This month in pop culture will be coming up here shortly. But before then, we're going to discuss today's feature film. That's hard to believe. Man, I can't believe this movie's 10 years old already. We'll be 10 years old officially in late April, early May. And it was at that time, it was the first Marvel film to be directed by the Russo brothers, who, of course, would go on to direct Civil War and Infinity War and Endgame, and to massive amounts of success for Marvel, which
yes.
to massive success for those guys as brothers have turned them into household names as directors. Even though strangely, they've only really done one major film since with The Gray Man on Netflix, which wasn't bad either.
No, it wasn't bad, but wasn't as epic.
Right. I think. So, but you know, the first film they did for the MCU was Captain America, The Winter Soldier. This film, man, is still to this day, probably my favorite MCU film, because it's a Captain America film, but it's also a spy film, an espionage film, a James Bond film in the fucking Marvel universe, basically.
Dude, easily. Mission Impossible meets Marvel. James Bond meets Marvel.
It's got action sequences that rival some of the great action sequences in film, especially the bridge scene. When Bucky first shows up against Captain America and all that, that's freaking awesome. And he catches Cap's shield, and Shield's like, "Oh, what? Who's this guy?" You know, I mean, it was just really cool.
Yeah.
But before we get too hardcore into it, Matt, give this movie a quick summary.
Yeah. So, you know, a little ways into working for Shield, Captain America uncovers a secret Hydra faction within Shield. Fury is attacked, and then he teams up with Anthony Mackie's character, Falcon.
That's right. This is the movie that introduces Falcon, too.
Yeah, on your left. You know, very funny scene. Yep. He's just getting, you know, passed up all the time. Get to see, you know, Sam. And then, of course, the great Scarlett Johansson's in the film. I like her performance, how she's always just kind of like, you know, just level-headed.
Pay attention to that.
Yeah. Her performance. Oh, okay. So her and Steve are together. She's the only one he can trust really at this point. And they go together and try and figure out how they can, intercept, this Hydra faction's, initiative to target people who don't agree with them. By one of the means, Crossbones, Crossbones. Why am I calling him? Frank Grillo as Crossbones, and the Winter Soldier, of course, played by Sebastian Stan, master assassin with powers comparable to Captain America. And at the end, they save the day and kind of split up because, you know, Cap's got to go after Bucky, and you got Nick Fury. He's going to go Shadow, which they never really follow up on that later on, which was kind of disappointing. But
They kind of do in Far From Home. He's up in the space thing and all that.
Yeah.
A little bit.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah,
They kind of allude to that he had been off planet, you know.
Yeah. I thought he was going underground, like you know, in the sewers. He was going to hang out with the turtles and shit, you know.
Well, there's a lot of theory that he was a Skrull the entire time, too.
Oh, yeah. We'll have to find out, I guess, as Marvel, like, unravels. But,
right.
Yeah, there's so many different personalities to Fury. You don't know which Fury is the real Fury now. But this version of Fury is freaking badass. I mean, the Escalade scene, you know, with him like waiting until the glass is like 1%, and then opens fire.
When I saw it, I felt like, whoa, the Russos get what Fury's supposed to be.
Yes. Yeah, they freaking do. And then he's like, you've got to keep, it's cheesy as hell, but it's so cool when Samuel L. Jackson says it at the end where you've got to keep both eyes open. And then his other eye is like encrypted, and he's able to disable the scramjets. What's cool about the espionage is they took inspiration from the NSA. So nobody knew what the NSA was until Edward Snowden leaked it and then had to go overseas because he leaked government secrets. But the fact that they incorporated that the government is listening to everything and analyzing everything about you and then storing it in a database and wiretapping the nation, and they took it into Hydra trying to figure out who you would vote for, who you would side with, you know, based on your like voting patterns and your habits. And they named Stephen Strange and some other big names that, you know, we didn't know Stephen Strange was going to be part of the Marvel Universe yet, but they talk about him. So we're like, oh man, you know, now we're going to get Stephen Strange later. But it also gives you, you know, reason why they wanted to take Iron Man's suit away in Iron Man 2, because that senator that reprises his role is Hydra. You see him in the film as well. So that was a really, really cool adaptation of something real life and then applying it in that fashion. And it made for a really, really good storyline. I mean, just like you said, and then the action scenes. Man, just, you pick any one of them. Pick any one
and,
of them.
And not just the action scenes. This is one of the better acted Marvel movies. Chris Evans is better than normal Chris Evans in this.
Yes.
It gave the Marvel Universe some Hollywood cred by getting Robert freaking Redford in the movie.
Hell yeah,
I mean, Redford did it because his grandchildren wanted him to do it, but it's still badass that he did it. This is one of our great actors, directors of all time.
Indecent Proposal.
Yeah. And
yeah.
Well, I mean, that's not what most people remember him for, but oh, sure, Matt. But, you know, he's like, yeah, I'll be in an MCU film. And I mean, I remember seeing this going, wow, they got Robert Redford being a Marvel Cinematic Universe film. And that's pretty cool.
And he's good as a bad guy.
Yeah.
It's like, you don't expect him to be a bad guy, but then like, I think as soon as Cap leaves that room, you just know that it's an act and he's just trying to lock Captain America away.
Right. Trust me. Isn't that the scene that precedes the, famous elevator scene, right? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which is now a great meme. And the latest elevator scene meme that I've seen, is whenever Captain America whispers to one of the guys, hey, did you hear Facebook went down? And one of the other guys says, oh, yeah, it was on pause. And he says it was metapause. Like menopause, but metapause. And then they all tackle him, trying to get him in the elevator. You know?
Sorry, listeners. Matt just derailed the show.
Pop culture. Hey, you know, it's part of the meme culture now. And it's one of the better ones because, you know, it's used.
Rewind 30 seconds, delete, back to the future. wow. Ah, you're so fucking goofy. Oh, that's why that's why I didn't watch Aquaman, because the kids wanted to watch Wonka again, and then they wanted to watch the original Willy Wonka. And they both decided that the original Willy Wonka is not as good because it's old.
Oh, man. Come on. It's got the charm. It's got the charm.
It is a little different after watching the new one, I have to say. But anyway.
Yeah.
So because that was the plan, was to watch Aquaman, and I got outvoted by the kids to watch Wonka.
Got to stop giving them the right to vote, you know?
That's right. Damn it. anyway, back. The cool. And you are. I want to go back to what you said, like, with Fury and how some of those threads that they left open and they didn't do, that is probably my one thing. Like Winter Soldier is a great film. One of the better comic book films. It's one of the best films in MCU, but I do feel like there's a lot of stuff they unlocked with the Hydra and all that, that kind of doesn't, other than after Civil War, it kind of just disappears in some ways.
Yeah.
And that's probably been the biggest beef about the MCU in its entirety. And it's, you know, 13 plus years, is that it's almost 15 years now since Iron Man. Is that there's been a lot of threads that are left open, you know, unfortunately, because they introduced so many things, they're trying to intertwine these films. And they do address Hydra in Civil War in a couple, and even in, wasn't it addressed in the Black Widow movie too? So there are some addresses of Hydra and stuff, but then it just sort of disappears. And it's not mentioned a lot. It's mentioned here and there. But I was thinking that Winter Soldier was going to lead to this full-on, like, I feel like Civil War should have almost been two films, even though the Civil War movie is really good. But it felt like it was leading to this massive war between the superheroes and Hydra and all this stuff. And then it would have been so badass to do it as two films and then have Thanos show up and fuck everything up, where everybody's got to unite. Like, okay, we can't fight anymore. You know? And And that is my one thing. It's like, it felt like this movie was leading to even bigger things and actually led up to, if that's fair to say.
Yeah.
It felt like the Hydra and the dissolution of S.H.I.E.L.D. was going to be a bigger threat than it was, you know? So we sort of deal with it in Civil War. Then bam, we don't have time to do it anymore because we got Thanos showing up, you know?
Yeah. So, and then in Infinity War, they're just like, yeah, we broke up, you know, like the Beatles.
Yeah.
And then that's it. We don't leave
it. But it doesn't take away from how well done Captain America the Winter Soldier is. Like I said, for me, this is maybe my favorite. Maybe he's definitely top five. You know, I think it's such a well-crafted film. It's tight and it's intense, and it tells a really good story. That is one thing about the Russo Brothers Infinity Saga films. They're really good, don't get me wrong, but they're a little long. And rightfully so, because they're epic. But sometimes epic can make a film bog down, you know, a little bit. And I do feel, especially in Endgame, there's parts where it really kind of bogs down some. But the Winter Soldier is just bam, 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 and it hits on so many levels. Fast.
I mean, it starts off in action. Cap's jumping out of a plane, ready to save some hostages, which that's another thing. Just the way that S.H.I.E.L.D. operates. It's like they forcefully put some S.H.I.E.L.D. agents on a boat that they knew was going to get taken over. That way they'd have a reason to go in and, you know, execute a strike with a strike team. It's funny how they do things, things that they couldn't get clearance on. They obviously can't just go after somebody, but now if they make it to where they have a hostage situation,
we can do it.
Yeah.
And then, you're right. The opening sequence is great. And then, you know, if you were following the MCU up to this point, man, the payoff whenever Bucky is revealed and Cap knows who it is, I mean, it's emotionally intense and satisfying at the same time. You're like, wow, it's a moment, you know, when he sees his former friend who he thought was dead all these years.
Yeah, and I think we were supposed to get Jeremy Renner, and apparently there was a scene that was filmed, but it was like really, really short, where S.H.I.E.L.D. or Redford's character asks Hawkeye to go after Cap, and, you know, basically Hawkeye pretends that he is bested easier than he would have been, and lets Cap know, hey, I'm on your side. But it was cut because I guess the runtime, I don't know, but he was trying to find time in between filming. It was either Mission Impossible or one of the Bourne films.
Right.
But that would have
been one Bourne film.
Yeah. And it was supposed to set up like the alliances for Civil War, which I think you pretty much knew who was going
to
be.
Right. Yeah. It wasn't necessary to be in there. Yeah.
Yeah.
This film also gave us our first time we got to see Black Widow use her Widowmakers, which is another thing. I mean, a lot of little important things like that.
Yeah.
In this film, I think, of course, introducing Falcon, Sam, who would later on is going to be our new Captain America next year when Captain America, New World Order, whatever it is, a subtitle, it comes out. So it's almost like the first issue of a comic book. We are first is look at Bucky, first look at the Widowmakers, first look at Sam, who's going to become the new Captain America. And I think there's a lot of cool things about this film that make it so important to the MCU.
Whenever they're walking into the museum, it's actually, I guess, Gary Sinise is doing some of the voiceover. I didn't realize that. And then, of course, I think I mentioned it last time on the show, GSP is the main bad guy in the beginning. That's taking over the boat. And, man, it was so fun to always watch GSP fight. This is a little tangent, because he actually does martial arts, so it was cool seeing an actual martial artist fight, you know, Chris Evans. Just thought that was cool. You know, sometimes it's a stunt man. This guy fought professionally, all kinds of guys, and he fought really well too. And he's like 40 years old, I think, when he did this film, and he's still got it. He still got the moves.
Did you see that Tyson's gonna fight at 58?
Oh my god, dude, and he looks like a monster still.
He's gonna be on Netflix. He's fighting Jake Paul. YouTubers become a bat. I'm like, what?
Dude, they better have a friggin' ambulance ready for that man.
I know, it's ridiculous.
For Jake Paul, not for Tyson. Tyson, dude,
I'm gonna destroy that man. I'm gonna take him out.
Yeah, I know, right?
I'm gonna unleash on him and bite his ear off.
Oh man.
Toughest motherfucker in the world, and he talks like a little fucking sissy boy.
That's right.
I remember being Mike Tyson might come after me. I better shut up, man. I'm gonna get my ass beat. I'll be like, I'm sorry, Mr. Tyson. You can talk like a sissy if you want.
He used to confront those reporters, didn't he? Like if the reporter said something. They made bad fun about of his lisp.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You ain't gotta make fun of the way I talk.
And then they get all quiet whenever he was all up in their face. It's like, this dude rip you to shreds. Oh, yeah.
But yeah, man, the winner, Captain America, the Winter Soldier, definitely one of the best entries in MCU and holds up really well still 10 years later. Like I said, it might be my favorite MCU film. I mean, I love Endgame and Infinity War, and I like Guardians of the Galaxy quite a bit. But Winter Soldier is one that I'll go back and watch, man. I think it's such a solid, it's not just an MCU film, it's just a really good movie. Yeah. And sometimes I don't think it gets enough credit for how good it is, you know.
No, it's got everything. I feel like there's humor in there. There's of course a story that unfolds little by little until it explodes at the end. And
what a great sequence at the end. The ship and all that, or on the shield ship, and him and Bucky fighting. I mean, it's just really well shot and well done.
And he's got to get the old suit back. And we get another Stan Lee cameo in the film. I think I said it in the last episode, but this is a top five Marvel film easily. I don't think there's many films that beat it, other than I think you can justify obviously Endgame and Infinity War, Black Panther. You could probably put this one fourth, you know, maybe in Iron Man ahead of this. Yeah.
Oh, and I like this better than Iron Man.
Okay. I think Iron Man gets that respect level of, you know, hey.
It does, but I don't even think it's in my top five.
Yeah.
There's better MCU films. And any movie that has Scarlett Johansson and gets an extra point. That's automatic.
But dang, so Iron Man 2 over Iron Man.
No, Iron Man 2 sucks. It gets a slight point. Iron Man 2 gets a point over like Ant-Man because it has Scarlett Johansson in it.
Oh, yeah. Oh, definitely. That was the first Gojo, too.
Yeah. Let's move on to this month in pop culture history for the month of March. Little monthly thing we do about once a month where we go back and look at what happened this month in pop culture history and talk a little bit about it. And what do we got for March, Matt?
Yeah. So 1987, Lethal Weapon, the first film starring Mel Gibson and Danny Glover, directed by Richard Donner, is released. And I think we're getting aren't we supposed to get a Lethal Weapon 5?
Yeah, it's been rumored for a long time. The problem with that is, the biggest problem with Lethal Weapon 5, and I've said this to a friend, I've never said on the show, is how do you market it with a Mel Gibson that's still not popular with the public?
Yeah.
You just can't. And I just think it's not going to happen. And until Mel's public image is fixed, you can't just fix it with a sequel for movies that are 30 years old and expect people to forgive. And I just don't think it's worth it doing it. And I think that's why Danny Glover doesn't say a whole lot about it, because he kind of knows that. And there's no point in it, really. The fourth one was already kind of overdoing it. Hell, the third and fourth one.
Yeah.
But we did cover the first one, the show, and that was one of those movies that I always felt like we almost didn't do the movie justice enough. We covered it, but I felt like, man, maybe there's things we could have said more about Lethal Weapon. But I think that's the biggest problem that we're doing a five. But definitely all-time buddy cop classic, you know, for sure.
Oh, absolutely.
And that's back when Mel was not creepy Mel. Well, he was not really creepy. He's just more like mouthy Mel. Maybe that's a better word for him, because he couldn't shut his mouth saying things about, you know, people he shouldn't say things about, you know.
That's true.
And, he's apparently making Passion of the Christ 2, which I'm still not sure how that – well, I guess it's about the resurrection of Christ. If it's as good as the Passion of the Christ was, maybe it'll redeem him a little bit with the public. I will see.
Maybe so.
And maybe Lethal Weapon 5 will get made. But, you know, like, I did enjoy Indiana Jones and Dial of Destiny, but some of these characters we don't need to see run around at 70 years old. And I really don't need to see Murtaugh and Briggs run around at 70 years old.
Murtaugh was already saying, I'm too old for this shit.
When he was only 40 years old.
Exactly. Yeah. Now he's 70.
You've
been saying like that for 30 years.
Yeah. How old is Mel? Let me look real quick. I'm just curious, you know, because he's got to be getting up there. Mel Gibson was born in 1956. So, yeah, he's 67 years old.
Yeah. Yeah, dude.
Well, I think, does he have a birthday coming up? Let me see. Mel Gibson. January 3rd. Sorry, he has birthday this year. So, yeah. So, he's 67 years old. So, yeah.
Damn, dude. Yeah, man. Getting up there. He gets a senior discount at IHOP now.
That's right. Woohoo, baby.
Woo. So.
You better not say woohoo, baby. They might think that he's doing something wrong, you know.
This is true. 1933, moving along. King Kong, directed by Marion C. Cooper and Ernest B. Shostak, featuring Fay Wray, premieres at Radio City Music Hall. I was like, oh, God. I was like, I did not practice getting this name off.
But still,
Kong, man.
Man, it's hard to believe, man. 190 years old, man. And such a classic. One of the great early films of all time. Remember when we did it? I was amazed how well it holds up, and it's just such a well-done film. Obviously, the special effects are dated, but they're 90 years old, but they're still amazing, amazing work for 1933, what they were able to pull off at that time. And you got to think about the work that went into that, editing that film together, that without all the tech they have now, just incredible stuff, man. And it's still better than some movies that come out today. That's what's amazing.
It is definitely better than Winnie the Pooh, Blood and Honey. Yes.
Yeah. I have a movie that's on the possible list for our theme month in April. That is an early film that's in the same vein as King Kong that I think you'll enjoy watching. I don't want to blow the wad on it right now, but again, it's one of those films that you just see the charm in it. You see what went into it and why it's so influential. It's another movie like King Kong. It's very influential. Let's just, you know, we probably don't have Jurassic Park and a few other movies without this film. So, you know.
Wow. Interesting. I'm be itching to see what that one is, man. It might be one of those films that I haven't seen. That's usually the theme this year. I keep picking films I haven't seen before. So we'll go forward a bit to 2002. WrestleMania 18, Skydome, Toronto, Ontario. Toronto, Canada.
Ontario.
Yeah. Crap. I was like, I got it right the first time. Triple H beats Chris Jericho for the undisputed WWF heavyweight title. I remember you said something about you were at UFC.
I was at 17 the year before. That's interesting because Stone Cold beat The Rock the year before and won the title. So he didn't stay hanging on to it for a year. I guess he lost it. But
I must have lost it somewhere.
Yeah, and you know now like Roman Reigns has been the champion for almost 3 years, but back then they did have more title changes, you know, quicker. That's why when you hear Stone Cold or The Rock was a 17-time champion, you take that with a bit of a grain of salt. There were times back then during the Raw Attitude Era where they would lose a belt, then win it back the next month, hold on to it a few months, lose it again, win it again. So, you know, you got to take 17 times with a grain of salt. That's cool, man. Yeah, I think that's when Triple H was starting to do his major heel turn and becoming a bad guy, and Chris Jericho was real popular. You know, I've been rewatching wrestling some lately, kind of getting back into it, and we'll likely tune into WrestleMania this year in April when it comes on.
On Peacock.
Yep.
So it was Texas's birthday earlier this month, and Texas Icon, 1997, film Selena, based on the life of singer Selena Quintanilla Perez, starring Jennifer Lopez, in her breakthrough role, directed by Gregory Nava. Jennifer Lopez was a backup dancer on Soul Train, I believe. And the family had to move fast, and their answer was Jennifer Lopez. And then a star was born. We found out who Jennifer Lopez really was after this film. And thought that was interesting to talk about. And now we've got the... yes. And for her to play Selena's asset, she had to wear butt pads. She did not
I've
have
never really
butt.
Seen that movie. I've seen parts of it, and you know,
it's really. Dated, but it's a classic. Just, yeah, it's a biopic.
Well, and I've said this before when you brought it up before. It's a classic in certain areas, yes. In certain demographics. Mm-hmm. I would imagine you could go to the middle of New York City and ask random white guy who's a film buff and watches movies, but probably doesn't consider Selena a classic. But if you come down to Texas or California, larger Hispanic communities, and watched random white guy film critic as Selena classic. The reason I say white guy, because obvious most Hispanic cultures know who Selena is. And down in Texas or California, you probably would say. So I don't think it's across the world classic like The Wizard of Oz is, you know.
Definitely more of a demographic classic. Certain southern states for sure.
Yeah.
And then there's that Peacock special of the girl who lady who killed Selena. I can't remember her name right now. Yolanda.
Yeah,
Yolanda.
That feels like a money grab thing. Feels it like does. The family needed some money. Oh, we'll sell some rights to more documentary to all stories or whatever. Yeah.
Keep the talks up.
Yeah.
I think she's eligible to get out next year. I think so. Hmm. We'll see. So don't want to get too derailed. 1999 film that changed action movies forever. The Matrix, written and directed by the Wachowskis, starring Keanu Reeves, Lawrence Fishburne, Carrie Ann Moss. Trinity.
I think, yeah, I saw the other day it was the 25th anniversary, but I think it changed the way special effects are used to enhance the action.
That's probably it.
That's how I feel about The Matrix. Because we already had great action films. The Matrix simply, I think, brought action films into a new era, a digital era, to be fair.
Slowing down that kick in midair, you know?
Right. It didn't break ground as far as, I mean, you already had John Woo and Michael Bay and other directors doing great action movies. The Matrix simply moved it forward into the 21st century. And since then, there's been a lot of copycats. You just mentioned Matthew Vaughn. That's a direct descendant of watching Matrix films. Hey, I'm going to use wire to do my special effects in my action films. And it's not as good as the way the Wachowskis did it at all. And not to take anything against Matthew Vaughn, because I do like some of his films, but his action sequences leave a little bit to be desired. Where the Wachowskis did it with a style, and they did something new that blew you away on the screen. It was like, whoa, this is fucking cool. And we're still feeling that in cinema 25 years later, the effects of The Matrix. So it definitely is a game changer, but I don't think it changed action. I think it changed the way special effects were used in action films. It was just something we hadn't seen before. Because at that point, science fiction films were spaceships. They were, apocalyptic, like Demolition Man or Mad Max or whatever. We hadn't really seen a science fiction film that embraced the use of the internet and the use of technology and the use of the way the world was changing at that time. It's almost like the Wachowskis were tuned in to like, man, we're going to be on cell phones all the time in 15 years. We're going to be using the internet for everything in 15 years. Yeah, I think they're making this in 1997, 98. The Wachowskis were tuned in, man.
Yeah.
And that's, I think, where it definitely changed things.
And then it's crazy.
A modern classic.
Yeah. And the cast was full of like second picks. Morpheus was going to be Russell Crowe.
Yeah, Will Smith was going to play Neo. Yeah.
Will Smith was going to play Neo. And Aaliyah was going to be
before she Trinity died. Yeah.
Before she died.
Yeah.
And we got Carrie Ann Moss. But sometimes just like the movie Seven we talked about many episodes back, you know, sometimes the secondhand picks make the movie, you know, we couldn't ever think of the movie starring the original intended cast. They just do that well. Some things are just meant to happen. So, 1985, American actor Billy Dee Williams receives a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. Lando, baby. Han Solo, man, he was lucky he got to Princess Leia first, because Lando would have swooped her right up.
That's right. He would have been like, you belong here in the clouds with me.
That's right. Boom.
I'm going to swoon you.
Dude, he was, man.
And yeah, man, just a iconic, man. That's it. I mean, Billy never had to do another job in his life. He was iconic just for being Lando Calrissian. That's and it. And one thing I really enjoyed about the sequels, whether people liked them or not, man, it was cool as shit to see him come back for Rise of Skywalker and give him one last ride in the Millennium Falcon. So
yeah,
good for Billy Dee. I shook his hand one time and said hi to him in years ago at a con, and just a night, you know, very friendly for just a couple minutes there.
Yeah. He seems like a very friendly guy.
Yeah.
Another 25-year anniversary film. We just did a film not too long ago on this actor, and that's 10 Things I Hate About You. It's a modernization of Shakespeare's Taming of the Shrew, starring Julia Stiles and Heath Ledger. It's definitely my wife's favorite film of Heath's. And I think it just showed that Heath could do romantic comedy. Yeah. They like this version of him, you know. They like it's that 90s teenage drama.
I don't even know what to say. I can't believe you brought. I mean, I don't even know what to say. I can't believe that's part of pop culture. Like, you know, man, it's like that's like bringing up Pretty Little Liars. Oh wait, you've done that before.
I have. There've been worse things. At least it's got Heath, you know.
I mean, you know. Tom Hanks made romantic comedies, and you know, so what's your point?
Hell. And lastly, to go out appropriately, 2014 Captain America Winter Soldier, directed by Anthony and Joe Russo, starring Chris Evans, Scarlett Johansson, premieres in Los Angeles.
Did we just talk about that?
We did, but wait, you know, I thought we were going to do it before. Yeah, so
I feel like it was like a mid-April release. I remember that was the first year,
March 13th. It was March 13th.
Well, it was the premiere, but the movie came out like in April in theaters.
Maybe it was.
I remember that being like, I remember them Hollywood making a big deal about Marvel doing that, and it was like, wait, you can't release summer movies in April. Summer movies are for May and Memorial Day weekend, and Marvel was trying something different by bringing it out a little bit earlier. Because I think there was something else that was coming out. It was going to have some tough competition.
Was it Wonder Woman?
April 4th, 2014. Yeah, it had its premiere March 13th, and it hit theaters April 14th or April 4th. Yeah. So April 4th is when it hit theaters. So, yeah. So who knows? But yeah, I remember that was like a thing, like, you know, releasing a big summer tentpole film a little bit earlier. So.
Oh, maybe it's because of Guardians of the Galaxy.
Oh, they both came out that year?
Yeah.
I thought that was more, that was in August, though. That was later that year.
Maybe it was just spacing out.
It felt like there was something coming out in May that year that caused them to separate. You know.
Yeah, you're right. Guardians of the Galaxy was August 1st.
Yeah, I remember that was like late summer. Yeah. But probably something came out in May that year that caused them to separate so they wouldn't compete.
Probably. Man, that's also the same year John Wick came out.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
And yours. Slightly add. 2 years ago in March, we got Matt Reeves, the Batman.
Oh. So, yeah,
I saw that. It was the anniversary the other day. And still, man, I love that movie. I mean, I love The Dark Knight, too, but I really love the Batman. It's just such a good Batman film. And it's dark. Little fact is it has the most screen time of Batman in the Batman suit of any Batman film to date.
Holy crap.
It's kind of a cool little fact. Yeah.
That's
it's one of the few Batman films there's hardly any Bruce Wayne in. It's almost all Bruce in the suit. Yeah. So.
Wow. Even more so than the Nolan films, huh?
Yeah. 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 In the 3-hour film, it's something like almost 53 minutes of Batman in the suit. That's a lot. So that's good stuff.
Wow.
All right. Well, before we get out of here, man, we're going to preview next week's film and continue with staying in the vein of war. And we're going to go back to the Vietnam War, right? For the original Rambo film. And we're going to talk. So, and we just did Rocky III a few weeks ago. So we're going to bring Sylvester Stallone back around, and we're going to talk the original Rambo film titled First Blood.
John Rambo, a drifter, just passing through their town.
Morning! Headed north or south?
North.
Now jump in. I'll make sure you're heading the right direction. Huh?
You got some place I can eat around here?
There's a diner about 30 miles up the highway.
Is there any law against me getting something here?
Yeah, me. I want you to book this gentleman for vagrancy, resisting arrest, carrying a concealed weapon.
They knew he was innocent.
Starting to dislike you. Lot.
And they didn't give a damn.
That's okay, Warren. Don't worry about the soap. He's tough. Just shave him.
Rock. Don't move. I don't want you to cut your own throat.
John Rambo. One man who's been pushed too far.
You're finished! You've gone as far as you're gonna go!
Heading straight for the top. Right on top of him. There's no way out of here except through us.
He was hunted. Trapped.
There he is! On the cliff!
And forced to fight back. Don't push it.
Don't push it, I'll give you a war you won't believe.
Teasel, you and all your men couldn't handle him before. Now, what makes you think you can handle him now?
Because God knows what damage he's prepared to do.
You don't seem to want to accept the fact that you're dealing with an expert in guerrilla warfare.
Are you telling me that 200 men against your boy is a no-win situation for us?
You send that many, don't forget one thing. A good supply of body bags.
Sylvester Stallone. This time, he's fighting for his life. First Blood.
It's funny, a lot of people forget that this movie's actually called First Blood because they remarketed it later on as like Rambo First Blood or First Blood Rambo when they decided to make Rambo 2. But the original film was called First Blood, and it's still the title of the movie. And but people mistake it. And then years later, in one of these sequels they made, there is a Rambo. That's Rambo Last Blood, right? There's a Rambo, and then there's a Rambo Last Blood. And
yes,
don't watch those. I mean, I tried watching that Rambo. It's like, let's just see how much violence we can put into it. It's ridiculous. But the original film, going back to First Blood, is a pretty solid movie. It's a quick watch. It's like an hour and a half. It's solid. It holds up well. Stallone was still coming off his stardom from Rocky, and he decided he wanted to do something different and make a war film. And it's a pretty good film, man. And the sequels, not so much. But the original First Blood is a pretty, pretty good film. And it's been a long time since I've watched this. So it's going to be one of those where it's almost like watching it freshly again, because it's been some years since I've seen it. So next week, man, we'll talk First Blood on the show. And that should be fun. But until then, the RebelRadioPodcast.com for all your Rebel Radio needs. And we thank you, as always, for listening. And that's all I've got. This has been Mark.
This has been Matt.
Remember, as always, just go there and do it.
Just go there and do it.